Yeah! Welcome to the Compass Podcast, featuring Chris Chandro and the Compass team. We hope this message is just for you.
I'm just excited about this new season. I love fall. I love that today I woke up and it was cold. You know, right? It was stinking hot and muggy and gross all weekend. And you wake up today and it's cool and it feels refreshing. It's new. I love that new feeling. You know, kids are back in school. You're getting settled back into the new routines. I think my favorite thing about this season is that football starts this weekend. Yeah. Go Patriots. You know what I'm saying? This is the year. Guys, this is a church, okay? No, well, you can say it's a theater, but still, no hating in the theater, all right? But man, I love football season. It's new, it's fresh, it's exciting. We're starting off a brand new message series today called Love, Sex, and Marriage. And I'm excited about this series because we're talking about something that impacts all of us. I mean, if you look at our lives, I would be willing to bet that if you're honest in reflecting on your life, that most of the joys that you have felt in life and most of the heartbreaks that you have felt in life all spring from the same source, and that's love. I mean, love is this thing in our lives which can be incredibly powerful, you know, on, you know, the good end, you know, the power of the Force, Luke Skywalker, or love can be this thing, it's like a Darth Vader thing, and it's just cutting off our hand and throwing us down a pipe, and, you know, I'm your father, you know, die. You know, that wasn't in my notes, I apologize for that one, but love is something that affects all of us, and, you know, relationships affect all of us, and it doesn't matter if you're single today, or if you're dating someone, you're engaged, you're married, maybe you've been married a long time. There's aspects of love that impact our relationships no matter where you are in relationship, whether you're preparing for a relationship or whether you are in a relationship. And so today I want to kind of kick this thing off talking about love. And I want to tell you guys a story to begin with. It's a love story. And this is a story about how I fell in love. And it's a story of how I fell in love with NFL football and the Patriots. So let me share this with you. Terry and I moved to Kansas City to be part of a church in 2006. And really up to then, you know, I was not a fan of sports in general. I didn't give a rip. You know, when it came to football and the Super Bowl, literally, I loved the X-Files, and the X-Files were on Sunday nights. And when the Super Bowl would come on and my show wasn't on TV, I would be mad. And so my wife, she'd be like, well, let's just watch the Super Bowl for the commercials. I'm like, that's stupid. Let's just rent a movie. And so I was the guy who was putting in a DVD while the rest of the world was watching the Super Bowl. I was not into sports at all. Until we moved to Kansas City to be part of a church plant that was down there. And we realized once we were in that environment that if you didn't like the Kansas City Chiefs, you were not part of society, okay? You were ostracized. And so I wanted to connect with people. I wanted to make friends. So I said, I'm going to make a concerted effort. I'm just going to follow the Chiefs just so I can speak the language and talk about what's going on. And so that I did it. I started watching football. I started seeing what was going on with the Kansas City Chiefs and enjoying games. And so I started to gradually enjoy football a little bit. And then something happened. In 2007, I'm still just a noob to the whole football thing and still not sure if I'm into it, but in 2007, something happened. The New England Patriots were winning every single game that they were playing. Every single game. Now, if you know me, you know that I value excellence. I mean, I think if you look at my life and everything that I do, you're going to see that, you know. So I'm watching these games, and I'm like, I'm seeing how great this team is. And they're like blowing teams out like 52-7. I mean, they are just dominating. And so I'm just getting more excited. You know, they're seven games into the season, and they just keep winning. And I'm thinking, I kind of want to see them have a perfect season. I want to see what happens. And so every Sunday, I'm just looking forward to that next game. And every Sunday, they win. Then the next Sunday, they win again. And I'm just, oh, I'm getting excited about the Patriots, man. I'm watching it. And then they make the postseason, and they're in the playoffs, and they're winning every single game. And they make it to the Super Bowl. They have not lost a game in the entire season. Now, I don't want to talk about the Super Bowl that they lost that season because it's too painful, but watching that and just seeing it happen unfold before my eyes, guys, I'm going to be honest. I fell in love with the New England Patriots. Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, I mean, dude, I think I'd cut off my arm to have that guy's hair. It's beautiful. I love the Patriots. I fell in love with Patriots. I fell in love with football. And that's why, man, today I'm just super excited that football season starts because I'm in. Now, for me, it's been like it's only been 7 years since I've been into this. Some of you guys have loved football for your whole entire life. Some of you guys, maybe it's not football. Maybe for some of you guys, it's baseball. You know, for Dean Hendricksmeyer, who travels to Europe a lot, maybe it's football, the soccer version, you know, some European crazy. Maybe for you, it's cupcakes. You love cupcakes, right? Yeah, there you go, Treasure. I'm with you. We love stuff. And what's interesting about the word love is we will use the word love for anything, right? I said it today. I love fall. I love football. I love the Patriots. I love Tom Brady and I love his hair. All of those things. We love cupcakes. We use the word love if we're into something, if we enjoy it, we love it. How many of you guys, when you were younger, you watched Pee-wee's Playhouse on Saturday mornings? Anybody? Yeah, we're dating ourselves a little bit. There was a show called Pee-wee's Playhouse, and Pee-wee Herman was on it. And one of the things about Pee-wee's Playhouse that I always loved, you can bring that picture of Pee-wee up if you want. Oh, actually, go back one picture. Yeah, did you guys all see that? I just wanted to make sure. But... okay, yeah, let's bring up the picture of Pee-wee. So when I was young, I loved watching Pee-wee's Playhouse. And one of the things that I thought was so hilarious was that anytime anyone on the show said they loved something, Pee-wee Herman would always go, "Oh, well, why don't you marry it?" You know? And I just thought that was hilarious. You know, people say, "I love the Patriots. Oh, why don't you marry them?" You know, I thought that was just a riot. And there was one episode... Dude, this like episode changed my life, I think. There's one episode, Pee-wee and all of his friends are having a picnic in his house because it's a rainy day outside. And Pee-wee, he's like, "Oh, I love fruit salad." And everyone in the room goes, "Well, why don't you marry it?" And Pee-wee looks at the camera and he goes, "Okay, I will." And so Pee-wee Herman on the show has a wedding ceremony with fruit salad. You can see the veil on the bowl of fruit salad that he's holding there. No joke, he walked down the aisle. There was an officiant doing the ceremony. You know, Pee-wee said, "I do." And then when it was time for the fruit salad to speak, you know, the officiant went, said, "Okay," the fruit salad said, "Yes, I do." And so Pee-wee Herman married fruit salad. And I always thought, I want to marry something that I love that day. Oh, you know what? I don't know about fruit salad, but maybe someday, you know, I can marry a pudding fudge pop. You know, that'll be my best friend. But love is one of those words, right, that we tend to use in different contexts, and it has a lot of different meanings, and we use it in different ways. I mean, think about this. The way that I love my wife is very different than the way that I love my kids. Now, that's a really deep personal love for both, but I love my wife in a different way than I love my kids. The way I love my kids is different than the way that I love my dog. You know, the way that I love my dog is different than the way I love my football team or Mint Oreos or, you know, a comfortable hoodie. You know, the things that I love, you know, on one end of the spectrum are very different than the things I love on this end of the spectrum. And so for us, when we use the word love a lot, I think it can kind of create some confusion. It makes it hard for us to really grasp what it is we're saying and what we're talking about when we say that we love someone. Because, I mean, I love getting a massage, but do I love getting a massage as much as I love my wife? Probably not. Well, she hopes not, at least. So a question I want to ask today, some questions, and you guys may be able to relate to some of these questions. First is, how do I know I'm in love? Right? I mean, if you're married or if you're dating, you have asked yourself that question. Maybe you're asking yourself that question right now. Maybe you're not dating yet and you're asking it. Maybe you're married and you're asking yourself that question right now. How do I know that I'm in love? And how do I know that they love me? I mean, I love him. I love her. I mean, I think I do at least. But how do I know that they love me? And, you know, I know that I've been in love, but the feeling seems to have kind of gone a little bit. So how do I know that I'm still in love? How do I know? You know, there's all these questions around love, and I think that to answer them all today, we need to get back to the big original question. I mean, the root of all these questions, and that question is, what is love? In 2012, Google, their biggest search query in for the entire year was the question, what is true love? That for the entire year of 2012, that was the biggest question that was asked on Google. What is true love? This is a question that's ringing through our minds and ringing through our culture and ringing through the psyche of people in our country and in our world. And so today, let's answer this question. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at the book of Ephesians. Now, the book of Ephesians was written by a guy named Paul. Paul was an apostle, which basically means this. Paul went around teaching people and starting brand new churches and then teaching them about Jesus, showing them how to live. And the book of Ephesians was written to a bunch of people, a bunch of Christians who lived in a town called Ephesus. Actually, it was a big city called Ephesus, a big urban center. And so people who lived in Ephesus were called Ephesians. And so that's why this book of the Bible is called Ephesians, because this is Paul writing a letter letter to some people. And what he's trying to do is this. He's trying to say, look, you guys are followers of Jesus and you're doing a great job, but I want to clarify what it really means to follow Jesus. I want to clarify some really important aspects of what it looks like to have a life where you're devoted to following Jesus. Because here at Compass, we believe that following Jesus is the best life you can live. And so Paul's clarifying that. How do you do it? What is it all about? And we're going to look at Ephesians 5, and we're going to look at the answer to the question of what is love. So in Ephesians 5, 1 through 2, this is what Paul writes to the church in Ephesus. He says this, "Imitate God, therefore, in everything you do, because you are his dear children." So let me start right there. Background, context. Paul is writing to people who are already followers of Jesus. So he's saying, listen, you're followers of Jesus, right? And so because of that, you need to imitate God. You need to do all you can to be like him. You need to do all you can to apply his principles to your life. Now, I'll tell you this. Today, if you are a follower of Jesus, man, this is definitely for you. I'll tell you this today. If you're not a follower of Jesus, maybe you're on the fence. Maybe you're just here with a friend and you're just visiting and your religion is, you know, kind of an outside thing to you. You're not super interested. That's okay. Listen to some of this stuff. You have permission to not believe any of it, but take the meat and spit out the bones, because I'll tell you this. If you can apply this to your life, it has the power to transform and change your relationships as well. So imitate God, therefore, in everything you do, because you are his dear children to the church, to Christians. And he says this, live a life filled with love, following the example of Christ. He loved us and offered himself as a sacrifice for us, a pleasing aroma to God. So Paul says this, you're followers of Jesus. Here's what you need to do. You need to live a life filled with love. Your life needs to be known for the love that's pouring out of you. And then he says this, so this is what that looks like. You need to live a life filled with love. Now, this is what it looks like. It means this. You need to love the way that Jesus loved. And the way Jesus loved was this. He gave himself up as a sacrifice for everyone else. He gave up his life for everyone else. He sacrificed for me, for you, for, you know, that ugly guy in the back. Jesus sacrificed himself. I apologize if you're in the back. You're not ugly, I swear. I really can't see you that well. But Jesus sacrificed himself for us. And so what I want to do is, before we even start, I want to give you just the main takeaway point today, and then we're going to elaborate on it, okay? So I want you to just get this, take a picture of it, write it down, lock this down. This is the big takeaway for today, and that's this. True love always says you first. True love always says you first. Because ultimately, when Paul says live a life of love, live a life of true love, you need to do what Jesus did. Jesus said, you first. Jesus said, your needs are more important than my needs. He said that what needs to happen in your life for you to know God is more important than anything that could apply to me, because I want you to have a relationship with God, so I'm going to sacrifice. I'm going to put myself second, and I'm going to put you first. True love always says, you first. So Paul paints this big picture, he says this big principle, and then what he does in Ephesians 5 is interesting. He continues to write, and he starts giving examples, real world examples of what this really means, of what it looks like. What does it mean to live a life full of love? What does it mean to live a life where you are offering yourself as a sacrifice, where you're saying you first? Now, here's what's great about this, is Paul starts in 5:27, and he goes to the first analogy that everybody wants to know. He goes to the first example that everybody wants to get out of the way, because this is the big one we want to know. And he starts talking about people who are married. And he says this in Ephesians 5:21. So, in light of the fact you need to live a life of love, in sacrificing each other, living you first, and further, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. So, submit to one another. Because we're followers of Jesus, submit. For wives, this means submit to your husband as to the Lord. For a husband is the head of his wife, as Christ is the head of the church. He is the savior of his body, the church. And as the church submits to Christ, so you wives should submit to your husbands in everything. So he starts off saying, so submit to each other, okay? Mutually submit. Mutual submission. Submit to each other. And then he gives the first kind of breakdown example of what that looks like. He says, wives, listen, submit to your husbands. You need to respect them. You need to surrender yourselves to them. Be submitted. Now, I know that this passage, there's some women in the room like, I don't really like this very much. You tell him to submit to me, chump. He should go first. So, I get that, okay? Because if I was a woman, I wouldn't want someone singling me out and saying, you need to be the one to submit. Here's what I want to make sure that you're very clear on, is he starts this whole segment out by saying this, submit to each other. Okay? This is not a one side of the married equation to the other side of the married equation. Submit to each other. The first example he gives is this. He says, wives, submit to your husband. Because in the same way that Christ is the head of the church, he's the head of the family. You need to submit to him. You need to put him and his needs first. You need to say, you first to your husband. I submit to that. And he continues. And ladies, I hope this makes you feel a little better as we continue on. He says, for husbands, this means love your wives just as Christ loved the church. He gave up his life for her to make her holy and clean, washed by the cleansing of God's word. He did this to present her to himself as a glorious church without spot or wrinkle or any other blemish. Instead, she will be holy and without fault. So when he says, submit to each other, wives, basically he said, submit to each other, wives. Yeah, submit. That's what I'm talking about. And then he says, and the example there is that we submit to Christ, so we need to submit to each other. And then he says, husbands, in the same way that Christ is the head of the church, you need to understand this, that Christ submitted himself to us. That Jesus, who the analogy again, the analogy Paul uses is, wives, submit to your husbands, and you know, like Jesus is the head of the church, we need to submit. There's this kind of upward submission. But then he says this, he says, and listen, husbands, you need to be like Jesus, because Jesus submitted to us. He gave his life as a sacrifice for us. He gave himself up to be mocked and ridiculed for us. He gave up his divine privileges as God for us. And so he's saying, listen, guys, here's what I want you to do. I want you to love your wives the same way that Christ, the same way that Jesus loved the church. And how did Jesus love the church? He put every need that she had before his own. Every single one. In fact, this is how Jesus loved the church. Paul elaborates. Said Jesus did this. He loved the church so much that he gave his life so that the church, so that we could be presented to God perfect and clean and sinless. And that the best that we could possibly have in life, we could have. That's why Jesus did what he did. And Paul said this, husbands, this is how you submit. You submit by looking at your wife and saying, whatever is best for you, that's what I'm going to do. Whatever is absolutely best for you, that's how I'm going to live. That's how I'm going to submit. And this is, think about this. You know, Paul's not just saying, you know, Jesus submitted himself to the church. He loved the church, you know, for the good of the church. And so that, you know, the church could have a good life and do well. He did it for the best. And men, when we submit to each other, and you know what, let me even take a step back. I think that you can take the wives and husbands part out of it, because Paul starts it out by saying submit to each other. And this is what submission looks like. It means we submit to each other the way that we submit to Jesus, because we trust him and we believe in him. And that's what true love actually looks like. And it means this, that we submit to each other the way Jesus submitted himself for us, for our benefit, where he gave up everything for our best. Not just our good, for our best, that Jesus gave it all. And there's this image of mutual submission. And so let's bring it back to relationships. Let's talk about a dating relationship, or an engaged relationship, or a married relationship. The hallmark of true love. What is love? The hallmark of true love is this. Mutual submission. It's you first. True love always says you first. And so imagine this. Imagine in our marriages, if you got a husband over here and you got a wife over here, and no matter what comes, the husband's going, oh, you know what, sweetie? Yeah, you know, hey, listen, you want to go out to dinner tonight? Well, what do you want to do? Let's go here. You first. And the wife's like, oh, I really appreciate that, honey. That's so sweet. I like seafood. But you know what? I know that you really like pizza, so you first. And he's like, oh, I really appreciate that, sweetheart. Gosh, you're beautiful. And I because guys, you need to say that. I just love, somehow my hand's a puppet right now. I just, yeah, baby, you know, thank you for the pizza. But you know what? I want to go where you want to go, so you first. Oh, baby, I really cherish that so much. And like 3 hours later, it's just these two, and somehow they're moving closer, and they're just talking into each other's faces. Well, I know, but I really want, I'm starving, honey. I'm so hungry, but I want to eat what you want. I'm starving too. Oh, we're hungry together. And this image of mutual, could you imagine what our relationships would look like? Could you imagine what our marriages would look like? You know, forget just in the church. Imagine what marriages and relationships in our culture, in our country would look like if all of our relationships were known for being you first relationships. I mean, think about the fights that we have. Think about the disagreements we have. Think about the grudges that we feel and the hurts that we feel. You want to know? I'll just tell myself, you know the times where I get a little, you know, sore, you know, at my wife? Just honest? It's when I don't get my way. Right? It's when I don't get my way. Listen, I wanted to go to Meatheads. I'm tired of Chipotle. Oh, we can go to Chipotle. Lame attempt at you first, but fine, we'll do it. And so, like, I'm kind of you first. We're going to do that, but I'm going to sit at the table like this. And I'm not going to talk because I'm grumpy and I'm mad. And if we're going to go to Chipotle, you're going to feel it, right? Imagine what our relationships would look like, both married, dating, preparing to date, preparing for marriage. Imagine what our relationships would look like if they were known for mutual submission. If they were known for us always saying, you know what? You first. Think about the last disagreement that you had if you're in a relationship. Think about the last disagreement, the last fight, the last conflict that you had. And let's get to the very root of it. Really, let's be totally honest. At its root, what is it about? And I'll tell you, me first. Me first is the root of every conflict, every dispute, everything that seeks to separate true love, because true love always says, you first. Always. It always says you first. But here's our challenge to you first, right? Our challenge to you first is that we are naturally me first, right? It's just our nature. It's how we're wired. It's kind of how we're designed to be. We are you first. When I go to a buffet, this is not relationship, but when I go to a buffet restaurant, no joke, as soon as I walk in the door and they start to seat us, I feel like I need to move quicker. I feel like, quick, come and get my steak and drink order because I've got to get to that buffet because if I don't get there, someone's going to get the sushi that I want. Okay, and I'm going to get up there and there's not going to be any delicious sushi for me. And so I got to move quick. I get up there. You know, I got to get up there because if I don't get up there, there's not going to be any of the pumpkin pie and I got to have my pumpkin pie. Dadgummit, I wanted pumpkin pie, jerks. Stupid Golden Corral. I knew I should have pushed that old lady out of the way. She was taking too long. Don't write a check, okay? Pay a card or cash. Right? We know what that's like. You're in Walmart and you're behind the lady who's like pulling out her pennies because she wants to get it and she's got a coin purse and the coin purse probably weighs 50 pounds. And you're like, oh my gosh, woman, I'm gonna pay your bill. Just let me scan my card just so you will go, please. We are naturally me first. And you laugh because you're laughing at yourself because you know it's stinking true. I'm not letting the kids pick the TV show we're watching. You can't have the remote. Oh, this is all me first. And so the idea of you first is a challenge for us because it's just kind of how we're wired and who we are. But it's so important if you want to have a relationship the way that God intended for your relationships to look like. And if you want to have relationships that are just going to be amazing and healthy and loving and can last long term. If you're married and you want to buck the odds, you want to buck the statistics of divorce in our country, live you first. Paul continues. I love this. He talks about, you know, he uses marriage as an example of what you first love is to kind of illustrate what Jesus did for us. And he continues on in Ephesians 5:31 through 33. He says, as the scriptures say, a man leaves his father and mother and is joined to his wife and the two are united into one. This is a great mystery, which, I mean, if you're married, sometimes you look at it and you go, I don't even know what I'm doing. This is a mystery. I don't know. How do I do this? But here's what he says. But it's an illustration of the way that Christ and the church are one. So Paul is using marriage to illustrate what our relationship with Jesus looks like and to illustrate what Jesus did for us. And he's drawing a connection here that marriage is that illustration of how Christ loves us. And if we're going to be imitators of God, if we're going to love the way Jesus loved, then this is how we live it out. This is how we love it. And then he says this, so again I say, each man must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. I love that he wraps this up by saying, so again, I say, he's like, guys, can I just reiterate this again? Can I just drive this home, okay? Let me just drive this home, that this issue of submission, this issue of mutual submission, this issue of living you first, it's a love issue. It's a crucial issue if we're going to understand love, if we're going to show love, and if we're going to know love, that we live you first. And so marriage is this kind of snapshot, if you will, of what marriage is supposed to look like. It's this image of this spiritual relationship that we have with Jesus. Now, the topic of marriage is, it's kind of, in our culture today, it can be a little iffy because there's, you know, well, I'll just be honest. So this term is out there, biblical marriage. And, you know, it's going out, and this is what biblical marriage is, and this is what it's not supposed to be, and this is how, you know, it's supposed to. Can I just tell? I'm just going to be honest with you. I think that the term biblical marriage is, well, I'll say this, for me. I'm not speaking for the church. I'm not speaking for God even. This is just me. The term biblical marriage is a term I prefer not to use. And let me tell you why I don't want to use the term biblical marriage. Because show me a biblical marriage that was good in the Bible. It's like, which one? Which marriage in the Bible is the one that you want to emulate? Which is the one that you want to say, that's the marriage I want to have? Because the Bible is full of regular, real people, right? People like you and people like me. And so that means this. When you look at the Bible, when you see marriages that are described in the Bible, you see adultery, you see... Okay, marriage in the Bible, no joke, if you just look at the stories and the examples that were given, it's like the dirtiest soap opera that you'll ever watch on TV anywhere. I mean, it's like, oh, I love you, but you're married. I'm going to kill your husband, and then I'm going to sleep with you, and then I'm going to marry you and take you as my own. But then you're going to hate me and resent me, and then I'm going to go find 300 concubines because I'm the king and it's legal and that's what I can do. And it's like, how do you even maintain 300 women in your life to begin with? But it's just... it's ridiculous. I mean, like, Abraham, right? Abraham, the father of the Jewish nation, he was married to Sarah twice. He goes into lands where there were foreign kings, and he was scared for his life, and twice he lies about his wife, saying that she's his sister. And the king of this nation says, oh, well, if she's your sister, I'll just take her, and I'll bring her to me. And he's like, hey, that's cool. No big deal. So king of another nation is taking his wife into his castle, and he's like, oh, you're my girl now. And then till God steps in, he's like, no. And God, like, curses them and says, this is not cool, and you're going to have, you know, boils and stuff on your bod until he figures out. And then it's like, oh, Abraham lied. And then Abraham just goes on his merry way, and it's like, what? If I walked into my high school reunion and I slipped my ring off and I'm like, this is my sister, I don't think that's going to play very well, okay? I don't think that's going to work. And when you look at the examples of marriages that are in the Bible, I think when we use language like biblical marriage, I think people who are outside of a religious upbringing, outside of a spiritual context, and really honestly, I mean, let's be truthful, not everyone in the world believes in the Bible. Not everyone in the world gives it any credence. And so when we say things like biblical marriage, there's immediately lights that are clicking off in people's heads. And right out of the gate, it's like, well, I don't need to hear what you have to say, because when you say biblical marriage, I see exactly where you're coming from. Here's what I prefer. I prefer language of Jesus-centered marriage. Because what Paul is addressing in Ephesians, really what Paul's... in a nutshell, what he's saying is, you know, all these marriages that are written about in the Old Testament, and all these marriages that we've seen, and all the divorce, and all the damage, and all the adultery, and all the affairs, and all this, like, pain and hurt, and you know, that's come from bad and horrible, broken and messed up sexual relationships. Jesus came, and so since Jesus came, we're going to clear the slate, and we're going to show you this is what relationships are now supposed to look like. And my heart for you as a church, my heart for each and every single one of us, is that we have Jesus-centered marriages. And a Jesus-centered marriage is a marriage that starts by saying, I'm a follower of Christ. And Jesus is at the core of everything that I believe and everything that I do. And if Jesus is the center of my marriage, if Jesus is the center of my relationship, then I need to love like him. And if I'm going to love like him, just like Paul said it, so again I say, if I'm going to love like Jesus, I need to know that true love always says you first. What does true love always say?
You first.
Louder. What does true love always say?
You first.
You first. Man, if we can get this, our marriages, our relationships, everything can be transformed. When we have Jesus-centered marriages, our marriages are better because they are a metaphor for how Jesus loves us. A sacrificial love, a perfect love, a transformative love. And think about this. Jesus gave up his life for people who hated him. Okay? Jesus sacrificed himself for people who didn't like him. He sacrificed himself. He submitted himself to people who had conflict with him, people who derided him, people who absolutely hated him. Jesus gave up his life for people he didn't even know. He gave up his life for people he had never even met. That's the love that Jesus demonstrated. That's Jesus's love. And the way he loved people, and get this, the way that Jesus loved people he never even met, is the standard by which we are supposed to love the people who we are closest to. I mean, that'll blow your mind. Think about that. The way that Jesus loved people he never even met. People who didn't like him. The way he loved them, that's the standard by which we need to love the people who we are closest to in our lives. The relationships that are most important to us. Really, I mean, like Jesus' lowest bar is how we're supposed to love our husbands, our wives, our fiancés, our boyfriends, our girlfriends, our future boyfriends or girlfriends, our kids. That's love. You first. That's love. That's real love. Here's the thing. Following Jesus equals a better marriage because following Jesus equals better love. If you follow Jesus, if you apply these principles, if you apply this to your life, your marriage, your engagement, your dating relationship, it will get better because following Jesus equals better love, and love never fails. It never falls. It's perfect when we love the way Jesus loved. Now, will you never have conflict or struggle or difficulty in life? No. But when you do have conflict or struggle or difficulty in life, you know, when your tire goes flat on the interstate, here's what's going to happen. Oh, baby, let me get that tire. It's okay. I'm the man, and I've got huge, gigantic muscles. That's what I would say to my wife. And she's going to go, oh, you know what, sweetheart? No, let me. I know that I'm frail and beautiful, and you are definitely bulky and manly, but I want you to go first. And I'm like, oh, no. And then it's like, you know, all of a sudden, you know, we're smooching in the car on the side of the road, and there's a flat tire because true love is you first. True love is you first, and it can transform your relationship. It can transform your life. And so, you know, today there's three kind of takeaways that we can walk out of this room with. Three things that we can do, and I'm going to go through these very quick. And the first thing is this, is that you can do, is that I will say you first in all of my most important relationships this week. You can do that. You can say, you know what, I'm going to go out and I'm going to say you first in all my important relationships. I'm going to go outside and I'm going to start with lunch. I'm going to say, hey, let's go to lunch. What sounds good? That sounds good? Oh, that place makes me super sick. It makes me throw up, and I'm going to be on the toilet all day, and I really want to watch the Patriots play. But you know what? Yes, let's go there because you first. Let's start that this week. The first thing we can do is say you first in all of our most important relationships. Our wife, fiance, girlfriend, boyfriend, kids. Second thing that we can do is you can come back next week. Because this is just the beginning of the story of love and in how it can transform and change your relationships in love, in sex, and in marriage. So you can start saying you first this week. You can say, I'm going to come back next week because there's more for me. And then the third thing that you can do is you can invite someone that you know needs to hear these messages. Because we all know someone who's got jacked up relationships, don't we? We all know someone, and when we sit across the table from them, you know, we hear them and their spouse or girlfriend or boyfriend, and they just go at it, and it's like, oh. Oh, it makes me uncomfortable. And if they could just hear this, if they could hear what God has for them, it could transform and change their lives. You know someone to invite. Maybe that's someone you need to invite. They sleep in the same bed with you every night. Maybe that's the person who you need to bring back, and that's okay. That's all right, because God has the power to transform lives. And what we want to see out of this is we want to see transformed relationships. We want to see transformed marriages. We want to see your life transformed to better prepare you to be married and to be in that relationship that God may have planned for you. Man, when it comes to love, God has the power to transform our lives, our community, our kids' futures. This has the power to transform everything for us. Let me pray for you. Dear Heavenly Father, I pray in your name, Jesus, that you would move in our place, move in our midst, God, and that you would challenge each and every single one of us to live and to love in a you first way. God, I pray that even though it feels completely unnatural, and even though we don't want to do it, and every fiber of our being is screaming out, I want what I want, and I want it now, I want what I want, that God, you would just speak into our ears, speak a voice into our heart that says, that's not love, that's not true love, that you would help us, God, to live you first. Father, I pray that you would help us to examine the relationships we're in right now. And I pray that as we look at them, that you would give us clear eyes to see what that relationship really looks like and to examine it with the eyes of you first love. And God, to say, is this real love? Is this true love? Is my relationship exhibited on both sides by you first love? And if it's not, Lord, that you would either guide us out or that you would guide us into health, that you would guide us into the you first love that you have designed and planned for us. Ultimately, Jesus, our prayer is this, is that as we submit ourselves to you, as we follow you first, I pray that, Lord, that you would help us submit to each other. And God, when that happens, the power of the love that you are starting in this church and that you're starting in our lives, God, it could change everything. It could change everything. Lord, do that in us. We pray all this in your name. Amen.
Thank you for joining us at Compass. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you have any questions about Compass or this message, contact us at our website, www.compassbn.com.